Hi, and welcome to episode 1 of Pushing the Envelope.
So throughout this series, we'll be profiling some of the major manufacturers of analog synths from the 1960s up until the end of the 20th century. You know, we'll be cracking some brews, having some fun, having a lot of laughs. Joining me throughout this is going to be Trent Scott.
What's up, Pinger?
Nick Lust.
From the 613, y'all know me.
And Dan Keener.
Hello!
And I'm Adam Ping.
Hey guys, what are we talking about today?
The Moog.
The Moog?
The Moog!
Oh.
You have to pronounce it correctly. It was named after its inventor, Dr. Robert Moog. And in this episode, we'll be focusing on the Mini Moog in particular.
Okay, hey Trent.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going very good, Dan.
You all right for drinks?
I am.
Cool, man.
Keys, we're good.
Look, I know it's going to be a long day, but I've got to get down to the bare necessities. I got to talk to you about voltage.
Are you serious?
I'm pretty serious.
I don't want
Look at this face. I'm pretty serious.
I don't
this
want
doesn't
it.
Translate well on radio, but I'm pretty serious.
Yeah, no one can see it.
Yeah, that's why we should have videoed this. But yeah, I'm going to talk to you about voltage, man, because we're talking about synths and voltage is important.
Perfect.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, like, so there are loads of dudes like back in the day who are making synths, who like made huge headway in the evolution of synths, right? And you could say that maybe the first guy was this guy Leon Theremin. You know that name?
No.
Oh man,
explain it to me, Dan.
You never seen it?
Tell me.
Right. Okay. So in 1920, Leon Theremin invents the theremin, which is a thing that has like an aerial.
Okay.
Right, and you put your hand near it, and the closer you put your hand to it, the higher the note it makes goes. So it goes woo, like you can't see my hand moving, but it's moving closer to my other hand. You so it goes woo as my hands get closer together. I'm demonstrating this.
I might buy one of those, Dan. I would buy one.
It's
of those.
It's pretty well.
Would
well,
purchase.
Wait, would purchase would a purchase. Theremin. Pretty wild. People like the theremin. People have liked the theremin for nearly 100 years.
Wow,
it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So, in 1920, Leon Theremin's doing that stuff. And, like, you got, like, 1940s, 1950s, there's dudes who are like, you know, we're going to use electricity to make noises sound cool. And then, in the early 60s, like, the start of the 60s, this guy called Don Buckler comes along, all right? And you know what he said about voltage?
Okay.
Right, so he goes, I'm going to make voltage control noise properly. And he works out a way of taking voltage and assigning it to keys on a keyboard that you'd see on like a piano.
Wow.
So that every key makes a different kind of voltage and it sends this voltage to a thing called an oscillator, and the oscillator makes a different note. So you play a different key and it sends a different amount of electricity to the oscillator and makes a different note. So every key is a different note. It's pretty wild, right?
I'm with you.
Cool. What,
can you explain the oscillator though?
I don't want to.
Very just, creative.
It's really complicated.
You get very creative with that, Dan.
I know. Yeah, I don't know if we have time to explain the oscillator. No. So it's like a bit of vibrating something, right? And it just wobbles faster. And the faster it wobbles, the higher the pitch. And the slower it wobbles, the lower the pitch.
There it is.
So I'm a really high oscillator. No, I'm a really low oscillator. That's pretty good. I think that's a good accurate description. Right, yeah. So anyway, so this Don Buckler guy comes along. And about the same time he's coming along, there's this dude called Robert. Let's call him Robert.
Robert.
Moog.
Yep. Not right? Moog.
Not Moog.
Okay.
Moog.
Are you sure?
We've established that.
Is there a confirmation on that?
From him? Yeah. Yeah, I've seen him in action. He's definitely called Moog. Right, so anyway, in like 1961, this Bob Moog guy, B-Dog, he's in university, at the University of like Cornell. Mm-hmm. 61, he's halfway through his thing. And he decides, hey, I'm going to take that theremin idea from the 1920s and make a little kit and show people how to make a theremin. And he makes a little kit and sells it to people, and that, like, funds him through his PhD. He's doing, like, a PhD in engineering. So he's not, like, a music dude.
He's not playing poker to make money.
No.
No.
I've seen it done. He's not doing that.
He's making music.
Well, yeah. He's making noises. He's, like, down with the noises. Right. So, anyway, he's got like an interest in tape recorders and stuff, and he starts making these theremins. And a few years later, these other dudes come up to him, in particular this guy called like Herb Deutsch. comes up to him and goes, dude, I want to make, he's like this, Herb Deutsch is like a composer, and he goes, I want to make future noises. I want to make music like electronically. You know stuff about tape recorders. Do it, but think further. Like, keep going.
Okay.
And basically, Bob Moog goes, you know what? I will. That's pretty cool. He's that kind of guy. He's agreeable. And he goes, and he accidentally invents the kind of, he takes what Buckler's doing and makes it a little bit better. And he builds this whole massive thing, this big synthesizer. Like you know, like the old school synths where you see big like pictures of them, they're huge. Like, he makes one of those. It's a modular synthesizer. It's the first ever Moog synthesizer. It's a big modular thing. Like, it takes up a whole half a wall. And he makes one of those. And the guy who's like, who asked him for it, is pretty stoked.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a pretty, yeah, he's psyched.
Uh-huh.
He's got a pretty wild thing.
Yeah.
And someone else hears about it. So this guy, like, Alvin Nicolai, right? He's like this dance dude. He's like, I want more of this. I want electric music you can dance to. And so Bob carries on. He's like, I can do that too. And he makes like a slightly different but same kind of vibe.
So
huge
versatile.
Modular. I know. Where he has no limits. And he makes these huge modular synths. Anyway, by 1965, Bob's got a couple of dudes coming up to him and going, I want one of those too. So he makes a little workshop, gets himself a little store downtown, and he gets him and a carpenter guy and a technician guy, and they get together. And they're like a little team, and they start making these synths a bit more often, like a little bit more regular. And he starts charging money for it, and he's kind of making a business, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But yeah, like, and then in '68, there's this breakthrough album called Switched On Back by a girl called Wendy Carlos.
Okay.
And she like basically is playing, I think it was a dude at the time, I think there was a sex change involved, and he's playing like she is playing like all these synth parts, like all these Bach opuses, opi on these Moogs. He's playing all these Bach pieces, and everyone loves it, and everyone's like, wow, I like Bach, I've never heard Bach like that. That is just amazing. And people buy this record. And anyway, like, so everyone comes to Bob and goes, dude, you're going to make me one of those things. And he's like, okay, cool, that's cool, I can do that. There is a catch, though. They're massive. Like, I'll build you one. You'll probably leave it in your studio forever. And it's just too big to move. You need to move it. You got to get, like, piano tuner guys coming in, like, with a whole truck and stuff. And people are like, okay, that's cool, but I kind of wanted to play it live. Mm-hmm. And Bob and his two dudes, his three-man team, are like, you know what? We should try and make something same kind of vibe, but smaller, so you can take it out on the road.
Yeah.
You know where I'm going with this?
I'm following you.
Yeah, that's cool. they try and make a small mobile version of the big fat modular Moog, and they go through like a couple of versions. They try using like loads of weird space plastic stuff. They try and make it look like a spaceship. And then eventually they come up with this really neat looking thing with like, it looks like a piece of furniture with knobs on. And people love it. And they're like, what's this? And Bob's like, hey man, that's the Mini Moog Model D.
The mini. Yeah.
Model D. It's like, you got your A, B, and C. And people are okay with that. But yeah. D, he's
one.
Like, check this, right?
This
and people
one.
Are like, I'm down.
This is the future.
Yeah. Okay. People are good with it. So basically, all the Model D Mini Moog is it's like a big modular Moog, but made really tiny into one box, and it's kind of limited. You know, it's got a couple of things less than the big modular Moog, but it's still pretty good. And people are like, Bob, you done good. this is rad. The boy's done well. So the Mini Moog, as we know it, like, you look back and people love it, right? People using it still now, like, and people pay a lot of money to get one of the old 70s Mini Moogs. It's like 70 something.
How much would you pay nowadays?
I don't know, about $2,000.
$2,000?
About that.
Jeez.
Yeah, right? That's for one, some piece of technology that, like, came out in 1970.
Weird.
You'd be like, yeah, I'll pay $2,000 for that.
I guess.
It's not a spaceship, but I'll give it a whirl.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's got like three oscillators, and it's like really good if you want to do bass. If you want low end, Mini Moog's got it. And everyone picked up on this straight away. And it's got some really nice thick high end, like mids and high end as well. And like Mini Moog got really big in the 70s with things like the very last thing by the Beatles, like Abbey Road had a bit of either a modular Moog or a Mini Moog on it, on Let It Be. Yep. And then going on from the late 60s and 70s, like the modular stuff, and maybe the Mini Moog was on like Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys, which is cool, and people got down with it. And then like they had loads of demand for the Mini Moog, and then funk hit, and people were like,
oh, yes.
Dude, we need to have one of these.
This
so you got people
we
like
need.
Right, exactly.
This is what we need.
Right? If you're in Parliament, you need one of these.
Low
right?
end.
Full on. And yeah. It's pretty wild. And like, you know, Moog kind of closed its doors in the late 70s or whatever. You know our boys Ping and Lust. They're yeah. gonna talk about that. But you know, Moog kind of like went away, like the business kind of went away in the 70s and stuff. But like the Moog, the Mini Moog, is just like that iconic thing where people love it. Made a big deal. It was a big deal in the 80s. People like Gary Newman were making like this future electronic stuff, loads of digital stuff. And they were like, you know, we can't do this with the Mini Moog. You know, like Cars by yeah. Gary Newman, you know that song?
Yes.
That's sick. So that's all like... That's all like Mini Moog, and like people like Depeche Mode and the Human League, they were down with the Mini Moog, man.
Okay.
You know what's cool? People, yeah, like we said before, people are paying a lot of money for these now. People, they're kind of like making a resurgence. People are down with the Mini Moogs.
Yeah.
So yeah, I went out in the field the other day. You may have heard about this. I went out and interviewed my friend Peter Chapman. He's
okay.
a good guy.
Yeah.
He's a music. He's a music composer. He does like. Film and TV and video games.
Okay.
He's pretty legit. So I went out and talked to him about why the Mini Moog was so awesome.
And he explained this to you?
In detail. Let me show you, Trent. Okay, hi. I'm in the studio of Peter Chapman. So, hi, Peter. Who are you and what are you drinking?
My name is Peter. I write music for TV shows and video games and... general awesomeness.
Cool.
And I have no idea what I'm drinking. You poured it in a glass and gave it to me and made me drink it.
That's
it's white wine of some kind. Probably tastes kind of Canadian.
Yeah.
It tastes like maybe Wine Rack Honest Ed's wine.
Not far off. You could have gone with Pinot Grigio.
Guinnessillin, whatever that stuff's called.
Guinnessillin. Lovely. Anyway, so Peter, today we're talking about the Mini Moog. I see you have one. Evidently you have one. So you use the Mini Moog a lot in your work?
Honestly, not as much as I'd like to. I don't really get to use it in much TV stuff because TV stuff these days tends to be more sort of acoustic, orchestral kind of sounds. But in my... sometimes in commercial production, you get to use it, and in my own productions, I use it all the time.
What sort of stuff is your own stuff? Can you describe that for me?
It's all over the place. I've done a lot of sort of hip-hop production, electronic kind of...
Cool.
Been doing a lot of electro house production lately. Just, you know...
The huge. That's cool.
The fun synthy stuff.
Okay, so can you tell me and multiple listeners... What makes the Mini Moog so special?
How many listeners are we talking about when you say multiple?
Well, there's the other guys that are making the podcast with me, so it's at least four people.
Julie's telling me 10. What makes the Mini Moog special? I don't know. I think what makes the Mini Moog special is that it sort of is synthesizer. It basically set the standard for what you find on modern synthesizers. It evolved from the big modular Moog. They sort of boiled it down to the most basic elements of analog synthesizers. So
cool.
You've got three oscillators or two oscillators and an LFO. That wine is making me trip up my
It's fine. Languages. You can talk slower.
It's got a low pass filter, two ADSRs, and
the ADSR is the envelope.
Actually, it's not actually an ADSR. It's an ADS. It's just attack, decay, sustain. But the sustain can also be turned into RLEs.
Well, it sounds complicated, Peter.
Well, it's not. That's why I think that's why it took off, is because it's not. It was sort of the most basic, easy to follow synthesizer. I mean, the cool thing about it is, like, when you read stories about when it came out, guys were walking into music stores, and like the sales reps would walk into a music store where they're selling like guitars and violins and pianos and throwing this on the counter and being like, check it out, you use the oscillator and the filter, and the salesmen were like, what the hell are you talking, like, what's an oscillator? So it's sort of funny when you think about it that way, but I don't know, I think what makes it special is that, I mean, it sounds awesome. Cool. It looks cool as hell in my studio.
It does look cool.
And it's just fun to play. I mean, it's...
Why do you own one? What made you buy one? Did you hear anything you were like, hey, I want to sound like that, and it's a Mini Moog?
Yeah, when I was... I think I sort of first started getting into analog synthesizers when I was... I think I was about 18. I was just finishing up high school, and I was sort of starting to transition into... I'd been listening to a lot of, like, punk and garage and kind of really trashy stuff.
Cool.
And I started getting into more produced electronic stuff. And specifically, there were two albums I remember listening to. There was that Brand Van 3000 album that was really big. Summer of 97, 98.
Yeah, and Drinking L.A.
Yeah. And then there was also Odelay, Beck's record. And I remember listening to both of those and kind of getting really into these weird sounds. Talking to my dad, who was a keyboard player, and he was like, oh, yeah, synthesizers, this, that.
Cool.
Been there, done that, played them in the 70s. They don't stay in tune, wah, wah, wah. Which is his whole spin on old gear. Yeah.
Your dad, the Killjoy.
Yeah. And I just sort of got really into them, and I had always wanted one. But even then, it was like they were starting to get so out of my price range. Right. And this is also a point when you couldn't get, in like 98, you couldn't get soft synths. Like they didn't,
oh, yeah,
no one
right.
made them. I had a soft synth where you'd enter all the parameters. It was Windows 3.1. You'd enter all the parameters, hit enter, and then it would spit out a waveform at the end. And it took like 5 minutes. It was hilarious.
Sounds good.
So this was sort of the only way to do it. So I sort of started, like, you know, I was researching, and this sort of became the synthesizer that kept popping up. And Beck's keyboard player, Robert Joseph Manning Jr., played one a lot. And
sorry, what was that name again?
Robert Joseph Manning Jr., also of the Moog Cookbook. If you want to get schooled in analog synthesizers, buy their record. They actually do some pretty good Weezer covers. Oh, all synthesizing.
I'm down.
And so I was really, yeah, I don't know. I was just, he sort of became like one of my idol, sort of like new synth, like new keyboard players that, you know, I started following a lot of the stuff he was doing, and it just kept popping up and kept popping up, and I always wanted one. But I could never afford one. Now so I'm a famous, rich composer.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what the funny story is? When I bought it, I was working on a TV pilot, and it was the worst pilot ever. I think you may have seen me during that phase.
I saw the hair pulling. And the...
It was terrible, and I was only getting paid like $2,000 for this entire pilot, which... really isn't a lot of money for the amount of work that and mental breakdowns that I went through for that. And while I was working on it, I looked on Craigslist and a Mini Moog popped up for basically $2,000. And I was like, you know what? I'm willing to take all of the money I'm making off this dreadful, hellish experience and just put it into the one thing I've wanted since I was 18. So I did.
So you wanted one of these for what, four years?
Yeah.
Sure. Have you got any particular favorite things you like to do with the Moog? You were saying like it ends up cropping up on your hip hop sort of stuff. Are there any particular sounds and genres it lends itself to?
Yeah, I mean, the thing it's mostly known for is bass. So you can hear it's got pretty awesome amount of bass in there.
That's some low end right there.
Like, I just used it on a production where I basically dialed in like a total 808 kick kind of thing and had it totally sync up with the kick, but you could change the pitch of it. So it was sort of playing along with the track frequency-wise, but it was emphasizing the kick, so the kick got really thick, cool. Which is really cool. Another fun one that I like to do is you can get this sort of weird, crazy ring mod thing happening. Let's see if I can remember to do this real quick.
I like...
So it almost sounds like someone talking, like a weird throaty kind of thing.
Yeah, right. It sounds like the future. Yeah. 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So that's sort of like that was one of the things I remember noticing on, I think it was on Mutations. Instead of doing like drum fills, you just do that at every like 8 bars, and it just sounded awesome. I remember thinking like, that's way cooler than a drum fill.
Lots of big pitch drops, big sweeps, and weird stuff.
Totally, and like it speeds up as it gets higher.
Nice science.
Fantastic. Peter Chapman, thank you so much for your time. Yeah, keep playing that mini Moog. Thanks very much.
All right, you're back with Nick and Adam. How's it going, Nick?
It's going great.
Yeah?
How are you doing?
I'm good, man.
That's good.
So that was just an interview with Peter Chapman. He's a great composer. You should check him out at peterchapman.ca. Well, what we're going to do now is go through a brief history of what happened with Moog Music following the release of the Mini Moog. Nick, you were going to explain a little bit of what happened there.
Yep. So Bob Moog actually left Moog Music, citing poor management and marketing. And a year later, in 1978, he went to form Big Briar.
That's right, yeah. They had released a couple other models of synthesizers. One such thing was the Poly Moog, which was a polyphonic synthesizer, a bit of a departure from their typical monophonic synthesizers that they had done in the past. And this kind of led them up to 1977, which was unfortunately when Bob Moog decided to leave the company. And this was when he decided to go and off on his own, and he started a new company called Big Briar in 1978. One of the first instruments that he came up with was the Etherwave theremin. For those who don't know, Bob, you know, when he was younger, he used to make theremins with his father. He created this theremin that you could buy as a kit and kind of put together yourself. You solder all of the joints and stuff. And, you know, Bob had come out with a line of effects pedals, which he had branded under the Moogerfoger name. These were, you know, just great analog pedals that you could plug in a sound source and manipulate in much the classic Moog way. This kind of continued up until about 2002, when Bob decided to reacquire Moog Music again. And you'll kind of elaborate on what they did then, right?
So in 02, like you said, they reacquired Moog Music, and they came out with the Mini Moog Voyager, which was a monophonic synthesizer.
Yeah.
And it was a great synthesizer. You got that great analog sound, except with digital control.
Okay.
Unfortunately, in 05, Bob Moog passed away. But he left Moog Music with his legacy and a lot of great designs that they would later release, such as the Moog Little Fatty. That was released in 2006. It was another revamp of the Mini Moog. So today, Moog Music plans on releasing a more compact version of the Moog Little Fatty called the Slim Fatty. You know, Adam, even without the man who started it all, Moog Music is still a driving force in the music industry.
And you know what, Nick? I really agree. I'm really looking forward to what Moog Music is going to release with this new Slim Fatty. Should be really exciting, and I hope it works out for them.
Me too, Pinga.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. This is Pushing the Envelope. We want to send a shout-out to Peter Chapman. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/pushingtheadsr.
And also on that Twitter is a link to our Facebook page. You should also check that out. That's how the cookie crumbles. Keep on drinking.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Oh, I want me to show you a neat trick where we can fake scratching. This is a fun one. Yeah, totally.
You have to pronounce it correctly, right? Wait, what?